I like this idea of listening not only on a sonic level, but this idea of listening in a way of understanding, to try to be in the place of other people. And I think the sound has maybe this power of inviting to listen, inviting to reflection, and not showing you something as a truth. It's more inviting you to listen than showing you something. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Hello. Welcome to Wind is the Original Radio, a podcast where on Tuesdays we have conversations with the best listeners in the world. We talk about their work and philosophy, as well as learnings from nature they share with us from their own experience. On Fridays, we publish long-format immersive nature soundscapes for contemplation and to help you relax. I'm Elisa. I'm hosting and creating this podcast for Earth FM. Today's guest is Felix Blum, a sound artist from France and also based in Brazil. And now, on to our conversation.
I'm Felix Blum. I'm French. I'm a sound engineer, sound recorder, sound artist. I like to think the sound as a material that can be used in different ways, through the sound recordings, through the listening. I really like the Spanish name of sonidista that we used in Latin America, which refer to the work of the sound as a material, as a painter is using paint as a medium, the sonidista is using sound as a material. I have a career of sound recording, sound engineering that I've done in France and then in Belgium in a film school. And slowly I start doing recording on my own. I start sharing the sounds, and that's how I get to work with sound in an extended way, in sound installation, in sound pieces, radio shows or radio piece, actions, videos, collaborative process, mostly working with the public space as a place to record, but as a place to show the possible piece too, and most of the time working in a collaborative or participative way, including the people living different space or different territories that I'm able to visit or to record or to just to listen.
You reached sound through music that you studied for a long time. What was your specific connection or continuation between them?
Yeah, I arrived to sound through music, that's right. I studied music before I was 18, and then when I had to choose something to study, I decided to still work in the field of the music, but just in the sonic part. At the beginning, I wanted to work mostly on sound reinforcement for concerts and shows, and I started working on it the first years of my professional career, but I noticed that it was much more carrying flight case and boxing and working 24 hours for one show or one concert, and it wasn't that much of listening, it wasn't that much of music. Most of the time was other technicals or moving things. So I decided to keep working in the sound field, but yeah, much more on the sound recording, and then slowly working mostly for documentaries, which was for me a way to travel to some places where I wouldn't been able to go without being working on a documentary or on a movie. And that's how slowly I go to the field recording or to this sound recording of natural environment and different places. I like the idea that in a way, when I stop doing music by myself, I start recording sound. I like that maybe the sound takes the place of the music, and in a way, maybe it's a kind of continuity, or maybe there is not a clear barrier between what we could call music and what we could call sounds.
Interesting. I had a similar path from music as a child and teenager to wishing to work in live music engineering to sound design,
okay,
which I still do, to field recording, which is not a stagnant practice either. But in your work, I feel that is very wide. And what I mean by that is that besides recording solely the environment, being that what we call nature or urban soundscape, it contemplates the voices of its people. So the assumption I have is that your work is not necessarily looking for answers or not even to draw your own conclusions, but you are showing people's beliefs and myths that are completely inspired by their surroundings.
Hmm.
And I'd love you to talk about this, and if you could also refer to that in Luces del Desierto and Curupira, which I really, really enjoyed.
Thank you. I think for me, it's really like an ongoing process, and it's nothing has been planned. When I start working with sounds, it was mostly as a job, as a sound recorder for films or for documentaries. And I think the starting point of all this ongoing process is when I start sharing the sounds on a platform called Free Sounds after my first recordings shooting. It was in 2005. I was in Mali with two friends from the school. We went to do a small documentary, and I was in charge of the sound recording. And after this first trip, or this first 2 months shooting, I start sharing the sounds on this platform, and then on other platforms too, as SoundCloud or others' cartography or map on the internet. And when I start sharing the sound, I discover that I'm not the only one which is enjoying recording sounds, but that there is a community of people, and thanks to the internet, there is a way to being listening to recordings from different places of the world, from different people who actually enjoy to record and who enjoy to listen. And that's something that I wasn't really aware of it. I guess I just didn't pay attention to it while I was studying. And that's how I discovered that field recording was existing. First, it was through the recordings of Chris Watson, and then I discovered a few others, sound artists. But I didn't know about it before I start sharing the sound. So I think this act of sharing is for me the starting point, and it's something that is maybe a condition of doing anything with sound or with listening, is to have the need to share something. If there is no need to share, maybe there is no need to make a recording, then no need to listen to something if you don't want to share it. I think in my work, there is this necessity of sharing, which is the starting point, which is present until now. So when I think about sharing, thinking about sound recording, I like this idea that I'm not the owner of the sound I'm recording, which is maybe clear. If I would record, for example, a singer singing for me, I'm clearly not the owner of the singer, not of the song, which has been written by somebody else. And I'm just making the recording, and somebody else would maybe be able to listen to this singer thanks to the recording. So in this case, it's clear that I'm not the owner, I'm not the author, I'm just, you use the word vehicle, or just like a step in between a sound and a listener. And I like to apply this to a bird, but maybe to a place, to the wind, or to anything which is producing sound. So I would say that I feel responsible in a way for being this vehicle between places and listeners. And those places are full of people, so of humans with voices or explaining or saying things through words sometimes, but from other beings which are not human, and from the place itself, the tree, from the wind, anything which is producing sound, even the acoustic of the place. To go back to the two examples of Curupira, Bicho do Mato, and Luces del Desierto, I feel the same responsibility of being this vehicle between those people living those territories and possible listeners to their stories. Of course, I choose what I will put in those videos or in the sound piece. Of course, there is a choice. It doesn't mean I totally disappear. There is a way of recording, editing, and showing it, but I try to be much more the vehicle than the author. Then, of course, I'm very interested in the relation between inhabitants of the place, which can be human being or not, and the relations they have with those places, and how we could listen to a kind of a dialogue. I like to listen to it as a dialogue between the sound of a place and the sound of the people living there, which, depending on the piece, of course, can be more or less present.
What is your process of bringing myths to sound form or sound with image form?
Yes, I think the myths and the sounds are generally invisible things. So I think they share this invisibility. And in the case of Curupira Bishudomato, it's the sounds from the forest. But when you are in the Amazonian rainforest, you are listening to a lot of sounds, but you can't see that much because you have mostly trees and trees. But you're constantly listening to a lot of sound of insects, birds, monkeys, and other animals. So I think it's a proper place to listen to sound and then to imagine. If you can't see, you imagine. I think that the power of the sound is not to show. If you don't see it, then you can imagine what could happen with radio. You listen to a voice, you will imagine somebody. You will imagine maybe somebody very tall or somebody very fat, or you will maybe imagine the atmosphere around, which is in the middle of the jungle, or is in a flat in Belo Horizonte, or is in the countryside in Portugal. You imagine, I think, probably in a way similar to when you're reading a book. And once you show something, then of course you see it, so you don't have so much place for the interpretation. And I think that's what happens with myths too. When you're listening sounds in the Amazonian rainforest, you can see the origin of the sound, so you can imagine it's a creature, you can imagine it's something, and then you can give explanation to those sounds, and then it becomes this story or this myth. That's what happens with sounds, that's what happens with the myths, I think.
Es una luz que se mueve.
Es una luz que sale directamente de la tierra.
Es algo que se desprende del cielo, así ardiendo, se viene.
Cayó hacia adelante de mí.
Y de repente vi que pasaron tres bolas de lumbre de fuego.
Como si fueran a chocar con las estrellas.
Se avientan al fuego y del fuego ya salen volando en bolas de fuego. Como existe el bien, existe el mal, y yo creo que se van por el lado del mal.
Vienen por los niños o los bebés.
Ya se han muerto muchos.
Santa María, Madre de Dios, ruega por nosotros los pecadores, ahora y en la hora de nuestra muerte.
Ya sabes, es el miedo. Y lo hace ahí en verano.
In the second case in Mexico, they are talking about lights, so they can't see the light, but the lights appear during the night. And the night has this same thing as the sound, that you can't see anything in the dark, or maybe you can't see, but you're not sure of what you're seeing or what you're imagining, what is part of the hallucination, what is part of the reality. And that's something that I really like, which is really present in myths too, and give a big place to imagination too. So I think really myths and sounds share this invisibility, which may give a big place to imagination of the listener and a big interpretation of the listener itself.
Are you afraid to be out in the dark? What is your relationship with it?
I'm not afraid of the dark. I mean, I guess I was as a child, as most of the child. I'm not that much afraid, but I would say that the darkness is a place of everything. Because you can't see, so everything could be there. And that's something which makes it interesting in a way. A place for everything, or a place for nothing, give a lot of place for everything else. I like it. About the night, I think the thing is during the night you can't use that much the view. So it gives much more importance to the listening experience because most of the information don't come through the eyes but through the ears. And so that's something I find interesting because we are in a very visual society and we have most of the information coming through the act of viewing. And when you just close the eyes, when you're just in a place where you can't use anymore the view, then you're much more listening. And that's something for, I think, anybody, even if it's not somebody specialized in sound. So that's what I really like from the night. And actually this sound piece with image, this film of Luces del Desierto, came after the first film of Curupira. And I wanted to play a bit with this darkness because in Curupira you have a lot of moments where the screen is black and you just listen to somebody and you have such subtitles on the black screen. And I remember once I've shown the film, it was in Prague, and one of the questions was, did you really make all the voice recording in the obscurity? And so suddenly it wasn't the black of the screen, it was the black of the night, or the black of the image. In Luces del Desierto, I wanted to play with this darkness, and this black of the screen is never black, actually. It's always say something. Or even say it's just a very small light, then your imagination will make the interpretation of what it could be. And when you are in a cinema place and you are in front of a black screen, you just suddenly you're not anymore in front of a black screen. You are inside the black room. And so I like this idea of Orson Welles, who was saying that when you're on radio, you're in a 360-degree screen because you are inside the sound. And when you are looking on a film, you just have a screen in front of you. I like to play with this sensation that you're not in front of it, but you're inside or you are into the sounds you're listening to. Some people that told me that it's better to see it at night in the obscurity. Some people just try to go at night outside with even like with headphones looking at it. And then it's another nice experience depending on the place where you are. I think for me, for those films, which actually are not really films, and they are more like sound pieces, and then I put some images on it. But the starting point is not that I'm looking for something. When I go to the Amazonian rainforest, I don't know that the Curupira is existing. I don't know nothing about it. Then, of course, you could say maybe it's not something present in the final format. Maybe you don't know about it if you look at the film. But for the process, at least, it's totally different. I don't go there to know something about the Curupira. I don't go there to do a film. I just go there because I kind of take some holidays as a field recorder and I go there with my microphone and I start recording and then people will start telling me a story and then this story of the Curupira appears and I'm in the middle of the forest so I can't ask to Google if the Curupira exists or not and I just have to rely or to listen to the people telling me the story in different ways or different people telling me the same story. And so that's how I start recording. I start building this story, but I think the way of doing is totally different as if I would have done like a proposal to ask for fundings and then I would have doing like weeks and weeks of research on internet about the Curupira, about the story itself, and then I would have try to go to the Amazon rainforest to look for story about the Curupira, and maybe I would have arrived in the village and people would say, no, we don't know about it, or we don't want to tell about it, because it wouldn't be like this organic process of being there and slowly be in the confidence with the inhabitants of this small village. So I think it's totally different to go to a place to look for something than to go to a place to look or to listen without knowing if you're looking for something specific or without knowing what you're looking for. And that's a bit something that I've tried in the second film, Luces del Desierto, which means desert lights. I've just been there and I didn't know about lights in those deserts. And I started talking with people, and actually the first talk I had, I was mostly looking for like myths or stories, but mostly about sound. And people don't told me that much about sound, they told me much more about light. And so I said, well, if people told me about light, then maybe I should listen to them, I should ask more about lights, and that's how it becomes this film. And actually, in this case, I was in a place connected to the internet, but if you put lights in the desert, you don't see that much of those stories. It's more like an oral tradition. I find it very interesting nowadays to have things that are not in this huge internet sphere, but things resist to it and things are still not present in it, but presented in the orality of the people. Maybe that's another point interesting with myths in general, which they are much more in this oral tradition of telling stories.
Thinking that you have been in a variety of regions with their own stories and cultures, have you ever felt that there are places or situations you should not be recording?
I think that's an interesting question, of course, to know what can't be recorded or not. Then of course there is this question to, if in case the sound is produced by somebody, just to ask to this person if he or she is agree to be recorded, or if he or she is agreed that the sound could be shared. And I remind that I was on a documentary recording, I think it was of a music box, a small music box in Switzerland. I asked the girl who was playing it if I could share it, and she said, no, I prefer not to share it. And so, of course, in those cases, it's very clear. She wasn't against the idea of recording it, but she didn't want it to become public in a way. And of course, when it comes from an intimacy, from a private place, then it's very clear. I'm not sure I really feel what you were saying, like to record a place and to say to have the feeling that I can't record the place itself. But of course, it's an interesting reflection about what can be shared or not. What I can't record, most of the time I'm not recording. Most of my life I'm not recording. And even sometimes you try to record and it's nothing to do with the experience of a place, because basically you can't record everything. So I would say most of my life is not recorded. And probably even the 99% of the time is not recorded. So of course you can't record everything. And then if sometimes I feel people don't want to be recorded, well, first I don't hide myself doing some recording, because I really prefer to assume to be in the place, and I have kind of sometimes big microphones, or at least very visible microphones that people would in general understand as a microphone. So if for some reason people don't want to be recorded, of course I will not try to record. I mean, I've tried it in a few, very, very few moments, but I didn't feel like it was the result that I wanted. So it never really works. If I go to concrete example, I don't know, when I was doing this recording of funerals in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince, of course, I've been recording a lot of, during 15 days, I was recording a few funerals each day. And funerals can be a very difficult moment for the family, of course, or for the people there. So, but in most of the case, I didn't add any problem or no question, and I stay, my idea was to arrive always before everybody and to be the last one to leave. So it means I arrived before, so people would arrive to the church or to the place. And I was there before they arrived, so I was part of the space in a way. And I stayed until the end, because the end was the moment where nobody else was there and only a few very close member of the family, and so it was a moment where they could ask me things or say things, or if they wanted to, or if they feel like they would like to talk. But in one case I was late because I was in another church and I arrived after the beginning of the funeral, and it was kind of very crazy, people doing a room and they start screaming and kind of getting in trance, and people just ask me, but what are you doing, you're filming, and then I make them listening to the sound and they didn't understand, they said, oh, that's fine, you can record, because I think there is a very different relation with sound recording than to film. But this moment I didn't feel like, after they say it was okay, but even like this I stopped. Of course, there's a lot of different examples like this. And I think it's good to think about it. And we are each time more and more in front of these questions nowadays. Then, of course, once you do a recording, it's difficult to have a control of what would be done with a recording. I think maybe if you think about all the possibility of the use of the recording when you start sharing it, maybe you wouldn't do any recording at all anymore. But then is the problem the way people could use it? I mean, to be able to keep doing sound recording, I prefer to think that the real problem is the use that people can be doing of a recording or about any digital material which are produced by any individual with their phone or with taking picture or with recording. And I think that there are a lot of very nice ways of using those recordings or to listen to those recordings, and we cannot just stop because it could be a bad use or it could be an unfair or unethical use of something.
Mm. Yeah, it is true. We don't have total control of our own recordings once we share them. Before we started the actual recording for this podcast, you mentioned the Yanomami, and I am reading The Falling Sky, written by their spokesperson and Shama, David Kopenawa. And as you know, their mythology is very intricate and extends. Their cosmology is, I think, even difficult or impossible for us to truly understand and to actually translate their concepts of spirit, ghost, and mirror, and all the nature manifestations and phenomena. It's incredibly fascinating to me. And of course, that triggers me a lot of curiosity about them, about that relationship and about the place.
Yeah.
So I thought about the hypothetical situation where I'll be recording in their land in the north of Brazil. And upon my act of sharing a soundscape of that specific place, I was thinking of how I would potentially emptying its meaning, because for me, I can be hearing a call of a certain animal species or the wind through a certain species of trees. But for the Yanomami, it's much larger and deeper than that.
Yeah.
And so what do you think are the responsibilities of a field recordist in this specific context, especially when most of the practitioners are Westerners?
I not read it entirely, but it's a big book, and it's repeating himself a lot, which is part of the culture of the Yanomami, because I've been happy enough to share sometimes with David Kopenawa in his village. I spent like maybe 2 weeks or 10 days in his village, and then at the same time in the village of his son called Dario. So I've been aware about what you're talking about. And actually, I see a lot of parallels that could be done with the act of listening or the act of recording even, because as you mentioned, all those spirits, the way of giving them a voice is the shaman will start singing or will start talking. And in their culture, the shaman is not producing anything. It's just a vehicle between those spirits and the production of the sound. And I've been calling a lot of shamanic songs. I mean, they call it shamanic because some people are in charge of transmit those, they call them shapiri, those spirits, to transmit them into words or into a song. And I find it very interesting, this idea that they're just a vehicle between the surroundings, the beings, which are not only only animals, but if any beings could get a voice through the shaman or through them. And those shapiris, those spirits, they will accompany themselves. They could go travel somewhere else and they would still have this connection with those spirits which come with them during their journeys, even if they're not present, even if they're not in the middle of the forest. So it's an extremely interesting culture and relationship to the surrounding. That's a lot of questions which are coming out in general nowadays. And I think it's super important that it comes out. But then, of course, it's very complicated to have like a general answer. So you're talking about sound recording, but in general, the idea of anthropology or this idea of ethnography or this idea of people from the Occident going to other places to record or to get some information and then to share it or to produce it or even worse, to make money on it. And then you could say, that's bad, you shouldn't do it, which it's totally possible as a point of view. But then you just mentioned the book, and the book has been written with Bruce Albert, which is an anthropologist who spent a lot of time there. Then, of course, if the Yanomami doesn't exist, Bruce Albert wouldn't be able to write the book. But of course, if Bruce Albert doesn't exist, then if there's no anthropologist going there to do this work, then you wouldn't know about David Kopanawa. I think in this case, David Kopanawa get a lot of visibility and a lot of power through the book and through the work of the anthropologist, but not only Bruce Albert. And there was some work of some photographist which has been done and which has the same thing, people going there to take something and to show it to the world. So it's not enough to just say, no, that's bad and we shouldn't do this. Because if you listen to those Yanomami, if you listen to the place, to this forest full of people and full of culture, then you, in a way, try to take care about those people. You will try to take care about those places. And I like this idea of listening not only on a sonic level, but this idea of listening in a way of understanding, to try to be in the place of other people. And I think the sound has maybe this power of inviting to listen, inviting to reflection, and not showing you something as a truth. It's more inviting you to listen than showing you something. And I think that makes a huge difference. I mean, the microphone is kind of a receiver, and when you put it, you receive what people or what the place would like to share with you. And with a camera, with a photo, you're mostly pointing to something and you choose what you want to show, you will choose what you want to capture. Of course, you will choose with the microphone too, but anybody who has already been recording knows that even if you don't want to show the highway behind you and just want to show the forest in front of you, you will have a lot of sound of the highway inside the microphone, because this idea of receiving the sound of a place. And I think a listener is a kind of a receiver too. And when you receive, then you will get this responsibility of what you're doing with it, or you will share, or you will make people listening to it. Of course, it's very difficult to have like a response. For example, in my case, I've been recording some of those shamanic songs, mainly in the village of the son of Davi, called Dario Kopanawa. I didn't share them yet, but I've been talking with Dario about this possibility, and he was interested in the idea that those songs could be listening by other people. I was there 3 years ago, and I think sometimes you need just to take time just to get the recording, to make sure they are there, and then to see what could happen with them. And then in general, with musical sounds, which is very clear that is capturing something produced by somebody. I mean, it's much more clear than a sound of a bird. Musical sounds, I've been sharing them on in France, there is a CNRS, which is kind of archive of the, an archive from the state or from the research. So it's a place where you could listen to it, but it's not so easy for people just to download and to reuse it in another way. So it means there is a kind of responsibility You're supposed to ask for it, and then you will explain a bit what your goal or what you aim with the recordings. I find it was maybe something in between. You're still sharing, you're still not keeping this secret or this knowledge only for you. But at the same time, it's not so easy to just use it and put it on a Coca-Cola commercial. even if I don't think Coca-Cola is interested in listening to the Yanomami or to any of those traditional knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much for offering that perspective. I can agree to these practices when they are done respectfully, with curiosity, and with knowledge. And within these aspects of listening, what do you consider could be maybe just in your practice, if that is actually such a thing that you actively think about that? But what do you think deep listening is?
Well, I'm not sure I use this word of deep, because some people will call it deep listening, some people will call it like reduced listening, just like a contemplative listening. But I do understand what deep listening refers to. I think this idea of being listening and being really listening. And I think that's something which doesn't happen that much. Most of the case of people maybe would be listening, maybe when they're listening to music, but I think only a few people really listen to music. Most of the people just put the music in background, but just to be really listening, I think that's something which doesn't happen that much. And actually, we don't even need to have some recorder or headphones or anything just to be listening. It's just to stay, to stop and just listen for a few minutes or a few hours or just to be there. And when I do some workshop or some listening exercise with people, it just become magical, because don't have to do nothing and just have to be only listening. Experience is something so easy to do and that we don't really do in our common life. So I think for me, this idea of deep listening is when you're listening, but really listening. Because sometimes we have this idea that listening would be a passive act, that we are just listening because we cannot close the ears. We are listening all the time, but I think most of the time we're just hearing and we're not really listening. And definitely not in this act of deep listening or really listening or this active listening of what we are listening to or the place where we are. And I think when we are in this active listening, and then we can start reflecting about the place, about the relation of the place and the people living there or the other beings living there. And so I think maybe this deep listening is just to be plenty receiving all the information and trying maybe from what I've been talking today to all those reflections when we are really listening. Then you talk about this idea of meditation or like a spiritual practice. And I think I would say maybe in the other way, that a lot of meditative or spiritual practice use the listening in this way, just being focused on the place where you are, on yourself inside this place, of course, because when you are in a place, when you are recording in a place, you're part of the place acoustically, but maybe just as a being in the middle of the place, I don't know, birds will not come that close, or people will find it strange that you're just in the middle closing your eyes, or in the middle with a microphone. So I think it's actively listening to the place, and just I think in meditation they use it a lot, just to leave the ideas going through and not to fix on any, and just to be part of it in the present. So just to assume your presence in the present, or to assume your presence in the place. So for me, this act of listening happens in the places, it happens while recording, but it could happen without being recording, without any gear. And this happens at home sometimes, to just listening to some recording. That's a process that I really enjoy. And I think it's very enjoyable in a society which is very, a lot of things, very fast, a lot of information. While I'm talking with you, I could check my Instagram and look at 100 pictures in 1 minute and do a few likes and maybe even comments. But if you really listen, you cannot listen to 100 sounds in 1 minute. And while I'm talking with you, I'm not able to listen to those sounds, or it would make it much more complicated. So I think listening takes time, a lot of energy actually. I mean, you feel tired after a day of intense listening. So that's something that I really like, and something which is very enjoyable, I think.
You do many projects and installations with children. I've never worked with children. I would like to at some point, but I also hear from another friend who has worked with certain age groups that it can be a very wonderful experience. And since you've done multiple projects with kids, I wonder, you know, how that is, and if you actually noticed some specific difference in the way that they perceive sounds, or interact, or listen.
Yeah, I really like to work with children in general, because we've been talking about this idea of imagination, and I think children have much more imagination than us adults. I mean, there is so much creativity, and probably there is not that much of preconceived idea of what is good, what is not good, what we could imagine, what we couldn't. And I think it's super interesting to work with children and with this idea of sound, just to listen to some sound, and then they could imagine so many things and make so many proposals. So of course it's possible with adults too, but it's much more complicated. They will try to give the right answer, or to recognize the right sound, and with children there is not this feeling to be wrong. I think that's make it very interesting in general, and in this idea of building something, or doing a project together, I think it's very rich to have all those inputs. Which is interesting in a participative or collaborative project is that people, or children in this case, could give a lot of ideas and take the project to some points that you wouldn't have thought about it, or you wouldn't imagine that you could go in that direction. So this gives a lot of freedom, I think, for me as a creative process, or the idea to make something together or not. But the freedom is very necessary. And that's something maybe in general, to have this freedom to do, to have the freedom not to do too. It's good not to be obliged to anything, and to have this freedom to make something together, but that could become a lot of different outputs, or that could become nothing, just a sharing moment, a sharing experience, which not producing anything. In most of the projects I've done in general, is never exactly what I've been thinking about. I mean, with children or not. Of course, in the two examples that we take from the beginning, the Kurupira and the desert lights, it's nothing as I could imagine, because I didn't imagine anything at the beginning. I wasn't there to produce a film. But then working with children, generally in the last project I've done, children would propose some sounds to record or some sounds to include in the project we've done. And then, of course, there's some sounds that you could imagine, but then a lot of sounds that they just propose themselves. So it's like always take us to a different thing or to something, yeah, that I wasn't expecting. For example, in the project The Doors of Listening in Belgium, which is a permanent installation of 12 doors in the middle of the forest, and each one of the doors is vibrating with a specific sound chosen by the participants of the project. And some of the doors have been done by children, not all, some of them were by adults. There were some child from Kosovo, which were very, I mean, it was a huge family, a lot of child, and very problematic in a way, because they were asking to be refugees in Belgium at this time, but I was already going through a lot of different countries and with kind of sometimes being a bit aggressive with the others or with their family. And of course, it was very complicated. And then when I came with the project, I mean, I was new to the place, so there was this idea, yeah, somebody else to play with. And we've done some recording, and then they take me to their own game in the forest, which was close to the center. And so we spend a lot of time just going to the place and playing with them. And I was this new guy playing with them. And we start recording those. I mean, sometimes I just put the microphone on a tripod, and sometimes they record themselves, sometimes I record. And then on their doors, there is this game, which is part of the sound installation. Even if people would say, no, those child, they can't do any proposal. They're not able to do anything for the project they've done, and it was a very nice doors.
Ishiku makunu di loloku maku. Wawe undenge wam.
Kuben smid, kuben tahin, malatin yansun na'am, malat
zahir. Ashadu an la ilaha illallah.
And in this series of doors, there is a few proposed by children which were very interesting. Another children from Syria, he had a very nice idea to make just a schedule of his day. Hour by hour, he was just telling what he was doing in his daily life. And then he proposed to do it with his father. So his father is doing the same schedule of the day in Arab, and he do it in Flemish, actually. Or another guy from Africa, I can't remember the exact name of his country, but say, well, what I really don't listen anymore here is the prayer call, which was during the whole day and just giving the time of the day in a way too. So he said, yeah, that's something which disappeared from my soundscape when I arrived to Belgium. And that was a very nice proposal too. And of course, I didn't thought about it. And it was a nice proposal from a very young child too. So, I mean, this happens with adults too, of course, but I think child, they have this, they don't have so many barriers. I think it's much more free, much more open, and this can give a lot of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the absence of sounds and differences in the soundscape. Maybe on the reverse side, you have worked in very different and distant places in the planet. And you also speak at least four languages that I am aware of. And how is it for you to come to a completely different place, often speaking very different languages and very different cultures? How are you able to engage and create relationship with the people that you are working and interacting with?
I grew up in south of France in a small village, and I didn't have this possibility or this necessity to travel, actually. So I was mostly not traveling until my 18th, and then I start traveling to study, and then I start traveling to record sounds. And so I would say like sound recording and traveling went together since the beginning. So of course there is this difficulty of the barrier of the language, which is not always a barrier. It would really depend on the project and on the places. What I like when I'm in a place which is not mine or which is not the place where I grew up is this possibility to be a foreigner. And I really like this idea of being a stranger or a foreigner, because the stranger has the right to be strange. He has the right to make things different, because we don't know what his culture, or we don't know that much about how he is in his own country. So I mean, in this way that we can accept the difference much more than if it's a local. That's something that I really like, to be a stranger, because the stranger, he has the right to be amazed by anything, even something that seems totally normal, or even something that he wouldn't take in consideration. The stranger, he has this right to say, wow, what a beautiful sound of the wind in those leaves, or what a beautiful small insects. And you say, oh, it's just a mosquito. We have 100 of them and we're not amazed at all about the sound of the mosquito. But the stranger has this right because it's different from him. And I really enjoy this, the right to be different, the right to be interested by things different, the right to be able to be interested by small details, small things that you wouldn't pay attention. And I think about the idea of sound recording or listening, I think maybe it's a responsibility to pay attention to the details, to pay attention to the very small little things that nobody is taking care about, that nobody is listening. And it's much more complicated to listen to things that nobody is listening to. I think the idea to be a foreigner helps a lot in general. Of course, then it will depend on the different culture, of different place, of who is the stranger, and the considerations that you could have for this foreigner. I guess it can be more complicated depending on where you're from, on the relation with the place. But I think in general, that's something which can be very interesting. And then about the language itself, I remember I was doing a residency a few days in Romania. We were in a small village and just started recording the first day. I went to the field, I put the microphone. And then a few minutes after, a guy came with two horses and a char.
Char. Ah.
Of course, I didn't speak Romanian, so I didn't speak English nor French, nothing, but I make myself understand, and a few minutes later I was with him riding the horse and then trying to record the sound. And he was talking to his horse, like giving some instruction to go faster or to stop.
Oh, oh, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
This kind of thing, which became a kind of universal, which was the language of himself with the horse, but which became like maybe the common language with me too.
Hi, 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 di, hi, tata, hi, di, hi, 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 di, ho, 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 di, hi, di, hi, ho, di, hi, ho, hi, tata, hi. Hi, 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 dear, hi.
So I think there are ways to relate with people without speaking the same language, of course. And then, of course, it will depend a lot of the situation. Sometimes it can be a real barrier, depending on the project. Maybe you can go deeper, or maybe you will feel frustrated at some point if you're not able to understand the people. But then sometimes you can have some translator with you, or you have some people doing this translation or this possibility to speak with the other. So every situation is kind of different, and I think there is, most of the case, there is a possibility to relate or to listen to the people, even if you're not understanding what he's saying or what the language. I mean, a lot of things are not through the words themselves, and they could go through other sounds produced by the voice or by the people. And actually about the language themselves, I think in general, when you listen to language you don't understand, you can listen to the musicality, you can listen to the rhythm, you can listen to a lot of things, to the voice itself. And I think this gives much more information than the words themselves, which most of the time the words have like a specific signification. If I say a tree is a tree, we know what it's a tree. It could be a lot of different trees, but it's still a tree. If I listen to somebody saying a tree in another language I don't understand, I could imagine much more things, and I could pay attention to a lot of different things, which make it much more maybe rich in this sense of creativity, of imagination, and on this interpretation that we could have as a listener to something that we don't understand.
Is it a little bit like being a child, because we are mostly just curious and open and probably not very judgmental?
Yes, exactly. I think maybe that's why I find it interesting to work with child, because the child have this right to be amazed too, because they're discovering or they're just finding something. And it, I mean, the child find a stone and say, wow, look at this beautiful stone I just find. And you say, okay, yes, it's beautiful, but it's the same stone as the thousands of stone which are around this unique, this one. But they find it totally incredible, and yeah, you have the right to find this stone totally precious or incredible, even if it looks like the thousands of stones around it.
What are some references for you, like books or albums or any kind of work that has been inspirational or references for you in your own practice?
Yes, so I've been thinking about this question. Of course, it's always complicated to mention some, and then, of course, not to mention a lot of others' possibility or lots of reference. But I would say for me, as I wasn't like, I mean, it was like the classic people, like I already mentioned Chris Watson's work. I discovered his work, but I discovered this field recording or this sound art thing, and I just discovered it exists actually in a way. And I find it amazing that people could buy a compact disc of sound recording. I didn't think it was possible. So it was important. And then at this point, I start reading a few very well-known, like Murray Schafer with The Tuning of the World, or Bernie Krause, or even Gordon Hempton. And I should say, maybe I'm not agree, let's say, with any of those approach, but I find things interesting, even if I'm not agree, or even if it's just like a starting point to have a reflection. I think it's nice to have all those inputs and to see all those possible way to relate to this act of listening, to the act of sound recording. Then lately, there is a French woman called Juliette Vauclair, which has been writing a few books. And the last one, I mean, I think they're not translated, but the last one is very critical about the use of sound in, let's say, in a bad way or in a liberalistic way. And pondering this idea, just listening is enough, because, of course, you can listen and it can be a way to relate it to the other. It can be a way to understand the other. But listening or sound recording, as any other practice, can be part of a capitalistic way of building a society. It can be a way of selling more and to make you more dependent, or to just get more gains. So in the last book, Design, Sonore, and Listening at on the 21st Century, because she make a kind of a story of the use of sound design in the society, and it's very interesting and very political too.
You just listened to Felix Blum on The Wind is the Original Radio podcast. You can find more information about Felix on his website www.felixblum.com, as well as all the references we talked about in this episode's notes. Earth FM is a non-profit repository of hundreds of immersive soundscapes from around the world, recorded by the best artists. If you resonate with our mission, please consider supporting us by becoming a member or donating on www.earth.fm. Join us in the effort of awakening together to the wonders and preciousness of Mother Earth.